Hello, everyone. I'm Becca, dietitian by trade, mom 24/7, wife from the start, and when there's a few extra hours in the day, you might find me hitting the trails or on horseback.
And I'm Kara, a therapist to women, a mom to a boy, an entrepreneur, mountain junkie, and a postpartum runner.
And this is Fit for a Queen, a podcast that's devoted to the female athlete wanting to balance the teeter-totter of all the things we desire out of life as women. Performance, health, intellect, and taking time for self, even if we only get 1 minute out of the day.
We're so excited to be bringing you the queens in the athletic world who have done just that. Okay, ladies, take a seat at your thrones, grab your crowns, and welcome to Fit for a Queen.
All right, we have Dr. Christine Selby with us today. We're so happy to have her. I'll tell you a little bit about her. She is an associate professor of psychology at Hudson University in Bangor, Maine, and is a licensed psychologist in part-time private practice. She is a certified eating disorder specialist with the International Association of Eating Disorders Professionals and a certified mental performance consultant with the Association for Applied Sports Psychology. She's also listed on the Registry of Sports Psychology Professionals with the United States Olympic Committee. Christine is currently a member of the APA in Divisions 2, 17, 42, and 47, and is a past president of the Society for Sport, Exercise, and Performance. She's also a member of the Academy for Eating Disorders, IADEP, and ASEP, where she co-founded and co-chaired the Eating Disorders Special Interest Group.
Christine's published articles and book chapters in the area of eating disorders in athletes. She also presents locally and nationally on eating disorders and related topics at professional conferences and to allied professionals who work directly with those dealing with eating disorder and related concerns. Christine is the author of the book Chilling Out, we all need that, The Psychology of Relaxation, and The Body Size and Health Debate. Her newest book, The Psychology of Eating Disorders, is scheduled for publication late 2018. Great, we'll have to get our hands on that one.
Yeah.
Well, welcome, Dr. Selby.
Awesome. Thank you. Thanks for having me, you guys.
So I can't wait to hear all the tips and tricks of how we can chill out better. So would you discuss some of the concepts that's in your book?
Sure. So the book, I mean, just, you know, for your listeners' benefit, the book really isn't a how-to or anything like that, but it's considered a resource or reference book, I guess, but it absolutely goes through various relaxation techniques that haven't necessarily been scientifically studied, but then others that have a lot of research behind them and are known to be quite beneficial. So there's a section in there on you'd think I'd have this memorized, but I think the chapter is called, and I don't have it in front of me, but the chapter is called, like, you know, relaxation techniques that professionals recommend. So that would include things like progressive muscle relaxation, where you learn to tighten and release specific muscle groups throughout the body, and the whole time you're, you know, breathing deeply. And, you know, a big part of that particular technique is helping the individual learn what it feels like to be tense physically and then relaxed, and that can be pretty effective. One of the simplest sort of proven techniques is deep abdominal breathing, and I think what a lot of people don't realize is most of us don't breathe right, especially when we're like thinking about it. We're like, oh, I gotta take deep breaths. A lot of people, their chest expands and their shoulders kind of go up, where when you're taking a really good breath that's getting a lot of oxygen into your system, your abdomen is actually what should expand. So I often, you know, talk to people, whether I'm teaching a class or talking with patients about, you know, how to relax, we often practice what it looks like and feels like to do a proper deep abdominal breath. And it feels weird for most people, especially since you're making your stomach look bigger, which is really uncomfortable for a lot of people. So it's challenging for some people to do it, but, you know, once they do in practice, it's usually very effective to help them emotionally feel more relaxed, but also a lot of people report, oh my gosh, I feel like my shoulders are looser and I don't have a headache or whatever stress related stuff they're feeling. So
I'm practicing then, right now.
I know. Excellent. And the other things, and I think actually it's the first or second chapter, but it actually precedes the professional recommendations. There's a chapter on stuff that most of us do every day or could easily do every day to relax that I don't think a lot of people really stop to think about. And it's stuff like you know, hanging out with your pet, even a fish, you know, like watching fish swim around can actually be pretty relaxing. Mm-hmm, but, mm-hmm. you know, hanging out with a pet, especially when you're in the act of physically petting an animal, that actually has been researched and people's blood pressure drops and their breathing slows down in a really good way. Mm-hmm. Going for walks or other forms of exercise that, you know, you can easily fit in, taking a bath, reading a book. So it just kind of certainly is not an exhaustive list, but it presents, you know, like I said, the stuff that we can easily incorporate and probably already do. And then the stuff that's more formal that may or may not require like training or education from a professional.
Mm-hmm. How do you get the person, you know, Karen and I both treat eating disorders as well, and we have this culture of busyness, right? So to ask them to sit for 2 seconds and they look at you like you're insane. How do you tie that in with telling them, you know, the mental and physical benefits that they can get from chilling out?
Well, you know, I usually hear from people, regardless of what they're, you know, why they've come to my office, what their concern is, that I'm just sitting there, I'm not doing anything, or we're just sitting here, we're not doing anything. And so honestly, the first point of attack, I guess, the first thing that I talk about is that they are doing something, they're relaxing, and how important that is, both physically and psychologically. And that's, you know, most of the people I work with, like, intellectually get that, but there's still a pretty hardcore resistance that, but I'm not productive, I'm not doing anything. Mm-hmm. And it's a really difficult mindset to change, that relaxation is productive and is, you are doing something. It's just not how we, our society in particular, would define being productive or doing something. So that, honestly, that's usually the first thing that we spend time on, is just how they view relaxation.
And I was just thinking, like, you know, seeing clients that truly have an anxiety disorder and others just living anxiously. And I think so many of us are just living anxiously. What is going on? Do you think that we're just running around? do you see that too? And how do you think we've come to live this way?
Well, I do. So, yes, I do see that. I mean, I experience that for sure, that I find myself going, oh, my gosh, what am I doing to myself, like, today or like these past several weeks or whatever it is? I think, you know, a big part of it certainly is the culture we live in, that in fact, I was just recently talking to some folks related to kids' performance in school. And the focus was very much, you know, success is a word that gets thrown around quite a bit. And the definition of success is usually you're gainfully employed, or you have a high GPA, and you're wherever you're employed, it's something that's important. And we rarely do I ever hear anyone say that success is being happy and content. Mm-hmm. And so I think I think that's where that comes from, by and large, that we're supposed to achieve. And if we're not achieving and doing stuff that we can literally or, you know, theoretically hold up and say, look what I've done, I think we feel scared, like we're not good enough. So we push ourselves harder.
It's a great point.
Yeah, it's true. I really appreciate how you focus on this life and making it a meaningful one. Can you share how you guide your clients and how you guide yourself as a woman?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I did have that ahead of time, so I've thought about it, but it's a good question. It's a complicated one. But, you know, the roots of this for me actually, it actually probably goes further back than I really know. But I know in college I had a professor that was profoundly interested in sort of like really being aware of what it means to be just a human being in general, and how we just, you know, we go through our lives, like I was just talking about, not really thinking about just how finite life is, and that there's a limited amount of time and energy that we have. So I don't get all existential with my patients or my clients, but it's usually rolling around in the back of my head, like, we've got one shot at this, and being happy, which to me honestly usually means content. Happy is usually like you're smiling and you look like a psychotic weirdo if you're like smiling all the time. So I think,
like the emojis.
Exactly. Like, I shouldn't say it that way, but you know, the idea is when, you know, when people say I feel happy or I want to be happy, I really think what they mean is the content, satisfied. They sort of literally or figuratively kind of look around at their life and they're like, this is good. I like this. And I think really the only way we can get there really is to know who we are, who we really are, and what really fuels us. And yeah, there's stuff about, you know, living in a culture like this or just being alive in general, stuff you have to do that isn't necessarily very enjoyable. But by and large, I always hope for people that if they don't have a big part of their life devoted to something that really feeds, I usually don't put it in terms of their soul, but just like feeds who they are, then I highly encourage them to figure out what that is and to find ways to make space for it when they can.
I
I do that too. I mean, because the second half of this was like, how do I guide myself too? But that is what I try to do.
Yeah. That reframing. You only get one chance in this life. Is this how you want to spend all your energy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, congratulations on your newest book. Can you tell us what inspired you to write about this body size acceptance and health?
Yeah. So thanks. It's a good topic. I was going to say it's a good book. I can't say that. It's a good topic,
sure
though.
You can.
It is a good book.
Well, I really
you wrote
didn't.
It.
It's amazing. It should win all kinds of awards, right? So, I mean, I do hope it's useful for some people for sure. But I think the topic is really important. I mean, it's something that I do work mostly, though not exclusively, with people with eating disorders. So that, of course, includes, I think what most people think of is somebody dealing with anorexia, so somebody who's really thin or emaciated. But I also deal with people, you know, struggling with bulimia nervosa or binge eating disorder. So I see the range of struggles, certainly a range of body types. And it doesn't matter what the disorder is. If somebody is at all concerned about their weight or their shape, they usually are very dissatisfied with what they currently have. They want it to be different. It's almost always smaller for women, of course. And it's not just like, geez, I wish that. What comes with it, of course, is so much negativity. I'm fat, I'm lazy, I'm stupid. It goes beyond, I don't like how my body looks, and becomes this personal attack. And of course, some of that comes from how our society views body size. Some of that, of course, they've heard from friends and family and strangers, and they've incorporated it, and many believe they should be that hard on themselves because look at what their body has turned into, and it's entirely their fault. And so a significant focus of the book is really, I guess, pulling apart and really looking at, well, what actually goes into your body shape and size, because I think it's in my book somewhere that the saying or the approach that, well, it's you know, calories in, calories out. If you, whatever you eat, you got to burn that. Like, it's just that simple, and it's not that simple at all. And most people, you know, whether they're just average everyday people or people who are coming in for treatment or just professionals, or it doesn't really matter. Unfortunately, that's a prevailing attitude. So I talk in the book, but also with my patients a lot about, you know, understanding that this is not entirely under their control. And even if it were, what is wrong with your body? And of course, that's a whole nother mountain to climb, because they have a list. They have a really extensive list of what's wrong with their body. They can tell you that. And it's, again, it's all negative and it's all their fault. And so and I'm not immune to that. I cannot sit here and say I never have those negative thoughts or anything like that. So it's pretty pervasive, and it's really pretty damaging. Sometimes physically, depending on what people are willing to do to make their body look different. And then, of course, psychologically too. It can be pretty devastating when that's almost the entire focus, and you're just tearing yourself apart daily because your body doesn't look right.
That's tough, and it's not like it gets in the way. They had that article recently about, I didn't like how it was titled. It was basically like the largest woman to compete a marathon and now doing a triathlon. And I thought, more power to her. I wish they hadn't titled it, but she was just trying to spread this word, like, don't let your body size get in the way of athletic endeavors. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So hope we'll see more of that follow.
Yeah, precisely. Because there's a really great, and I don't, it may have been this woman who was featured, I don't know, but there's a really great, I guess it's a blog. And she's on WordPress or whatever. But it's called Dances with Fat. And her name is Reagan Chastain. And she's Her perspective is it's hilarious and serious all at the same time. She's I can't remember what her education is, but she's highly educated, like in some technical science field or something. So she understands research. She's read the research. So she's not just talking about her opinion. She backs it up with research, and it includes things like there is no reason why a large body can't be athletic. There is none. It's a matter of making your body fit, and it doesn't mean that you're going to lose weight when that happens. But that also doesn't mean, yeah, you can't run a marathon or you can't do a triathlon. So, or try, yeah, triathlon. So, yeah, so it's we rarely ever see competitive athletes who don't fit the stereotype of what a competitive athlete looks like, which is usually rare, very lean and thin for women, and of course, lean and muscular for men.
Yeah, I hope that's starting to change a little bit the more the discussion gets out
Yeah,
there.
me too. Yep.
Social media can have a few positives to it. So, Dr. Selby, we love to wrap up our interviews with asking each interviewee how they live out the fit philosophy. So, how do you balance, performance, health, intellect, and time for self?
How do I, you broke up a little bit. How do I
I'm
balance?
sorry.
Oh, it's okay.
Performance, health, intellect, and taking time for self.
Also $1 million question. It's a really good question, and it is a challenge. I think I can't say, again, that I'm in balance all the time. I don't even know if I could say I'm in balance most of the time, but what I can say is that I check in with myself frequently, not daily, but often, especially when I realize I'm starting to feel stressed. And I usually notice it first physically. My shoulders get tight and I do get tension headaches. I'm like, wait a minute. Okay. Ideally, I would have caught that sooner, but I like, what is going on? What, why, how am I pushing myself? And of course, when you throw in, you've got work, you've got your relationships, family, and then of course anything that might happen that's unexpected, it is a challenge. It is very much a challenge to stay in balance. And I think the most effective thing that we can do, which is also really difficult, is to honestly assess what do I have in my life? Literally, how much time and energy does it take? And do I therefore have too much? And when something is completed, if it's a project or something, does that space truly open up for something new, or is that space that should remain vacant because you need the energy for what you already have going on in your life? And again, given I don't want to blame culture for everything, but we are there's so many forces around us swirling that pressure us to keep doing and keep going and keep achieving. It's hard not to fill up space when it finally empties, when we've like, okay, I did that, I got that off my plate. Usually the next thought is, what next? Rather than I need a breather, and maybe what I have right now is more than enough. And the next thing that goes away, that space should also stay vacant. So it is difficult. I wish I could say, well, here's how you do it, and here's how you're never out of balance. But I think if you can honestly assess yourself, which takes practice, you can determine if you have too much going on, what those things are, and what things have to stay in your life, and really truly what things can go away. That's also really difficult too, because it's very common for people to say, well, I have to do these things. And I always challenge that. There's probably less than 10%, probably even less than 5% of the time when someone says, I have to do that, and they explain what it is, I'll say, oh, okay, yeah, I think you're right. But it's well over 90% of the time that there are very few things we have to do. We think we have to. So, yeah.
I really like that feeling we have to always fill that vacant space when it comes up. Yeah, I never thought of it in that term. I like that.
Maybe just put ME in it.
Me.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Selby. We have lots of things to look at with chilling out, and we're excited to see your book come out, and we'll be sure to purchase that. So, we
Awesome.
really appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, well, again, thanks for having me, you guys, and I think this is, it's fantastic. The, whatever the message is, there's so many things to get out there. So I appreciate that you and other people are putting out these podcasts to talk about important issues. So thanks for doing that. I
Thank you.
appreciate that.
All right. Well, have a great day.
Thanks. You too, guys.
Bye, Queens.
Bye. thank you to our sponsor today, Sentimano Counseling. Sentimano Counseling is the premier perinatal mental health practice in Kansas City, treating mood disorders during pregnancy and postpartum, perinatal loss, infertility, eating, and exercise disorders. Go to sentimano.com for further information about the practice and services. For additional information on today's topic and guests, follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Fit for a Queen. And
hashtag Fit for a Queen.
And don't forget to rate us on iTunes. We can't wait for you to join us next time on Fit for a Queen.
Bye, Queens.